Get to say good morning for a change. And welcome, I suppose, to the second decade of the 21st century. Hard to believe. You know, there are a lot of ways that you can come to know people or understand events. Humor is one way. It's often used as a tool to that end, and it can reveal a lot. It can also hide a lot. Hebrew scholars say that what we know as the Old Testament is rife with ironic humor. Yet who of us in the English-speaking world would ever think of the Old Testament as humorous? Essentially, none of that translates over. One example that works after a fashion is the story of Balaam and his donkey. I'll use a kinder word for that. Most of us know the story reasonably well. But the bizarre part is found when he's riding along and an angel stands in the path. The donkey is allowed to see it and he turns out of the way to Balaam's expense. And Balaam gets really angry with that donkey until finally the donkey is enabled to speak and he turns on Balaam and says, "Why are you beating me?" And in response, Balaam doesn't recoil that an animal's talking to him. He just rolls along like it's a normal everyday thing to have a conversation. Now that's comedy. If there's more comedy in the Old Testament, most of it's lost in the translation. But it's not always a problem of translation. As a more serious example, we have the story of Thomas in the Gospel accounts, following the resurrection of Jesus. Some of the others have seen Jesus already, but Thomas can't believe until he sees and touches. Jesus chided him only slightly for that, for a lack of blind faith, though in this day and age I have a tendency to think most of us can identify with Thomas. Unfortunately, though, people tend to remember Thomas for that one event, for that one small lapse, and they forget the rest of the testimony. Earlier, when Jesus was leaving to go and resurrect Lazarus, there was evidently a distinct danger from the Jews to his life. And the scriptures barely allude to it, but it was enough that all of his disciples hung back. They were too afraid to go, except Thomas. He got up and he followed, but he paused long enough to say to his fellows, if Jesus was going to go to his death, he'd go with him. And he went on his way. And only then did the rest of the disciples get up and follow him. So we see that Thomas didn't lack devotion. He simply lacked a blind faith. He needed to see to know. But when he did, he's the only one of the disciples, quoted in the Gospels at least, of immediately saying to Jesus, "My Lord and my God." We learn a lot about him through that record, and we often overlook it and miss the deeper story. So where am I going? This is one of those bad news, good news messages, sort of. As we've just seen, whether through mistranslations, different languages, or just looking the wrong way, we can miss things that are right in front of our eyes. So an all-important question, a huge question, is this. Can we actually know God? Do you know God? Do any of us? What does it mean to know God? Is it just knowledge, cold and simple? Is it emotion? What is true knowing? And in just these 10 remaining minutes or so, we'll have all the answers. Really, though, we can know God, or can we? The answer is both yes and no. And the Bible supports both those answers. Let's take, first of all, what appears to be the downside of the equation, and let's use a little human reasoning before diving into the scriptures. Just speaking logically, perhaps as a skeptic might view it, if we can't understand the universe around us, how can we understand a being, an intelligence, who could conceive of the universe, create it, and sustain it. A universe of almost infinite age, which is attested to simply by the speed of light. It's a constant. And by measuring wavelengths of light, we can see how long starlight took to get here, and by that we know that the universe is truly ancient. Then we realize something we can't grasp, that when we look into the night sky, we're looking into the distant past. That's hard to conceive. Many of those stars we look at, perhaps even entire galaxies, may not be there anymore. Their light was traveling that long. If we can't fully realize what this thing is, this miracle called life, how can we understand the giver of life? In the truest sense, at least from one angle, we can't. And the Bible does confirm that. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. God is quoted as saying, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." That would seem rather obvious. And look at Job 37, verse 23, first in the Amplified Bible. "Touching the Almighty, we cannot find him out." Then in the NIV, actually backing up to verse 22, "God comes in awesome majesty. The Almighty is beyond our reach." Trying to truly comprehend who and what this God really is like an ant trying to explain us. In terms of our level of living, the differences are just too vast. We can't even hope to fully understand the paths that God sets for each of us. Much of it, if not most of it, remains beyond our comprehension, since he's working on so many levels all at the same time. Proverbs 16, verse 9 says, "In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps." And Proverbs 20:24 says further, "A man's steps are directed by the Lord. How then can anyone understand his own way?" In Isaiah 45, verse 9, it's written, "Woe to him who quarrels with his maker, asking, does the clay say to the potter, what are you making?" The message is clear. God is forming us as he sees fit. And we won't know the details until eternity arrives. Until then, a great many mysteries remain. And we have to reconcile ourselves to that. How do you read comments of a merciful and loving God, and then look at history and see tragic circumstances abounding for no apparent reason, and then try to understand that mercy and that love? In the Middle Ages, the Black Death wiped out 20 million people in Europe, 40 million in Asia. And those 60 million people were over half the world population at that time. For no apparent reason, it began for some natural causes we understand, but then finally mysteriously ended. As with Job, sometimes suffering seems to go beyond measure, and yet no answer comes. And all we're told is, as with Thomas, have faith. More on that shortly. How then, through all these mysteries and unknowns, can we actually come to know God, the master of this endless universe and of our more immediate fates, the one who calls himself our Father and our friend? How is it possible, and what does God himself mean in the face of all this when he says that he wants us to know him? That part of our calling is so that we can come to know Him. What does that mean? What is knowing? Fortunately, the answers in life and in the Bible are amazingly simple. So let's look at the positive side of the equation. Interestingly enough, and conveniently, the English word know, as in to know, is essentially the same as the original Greek. First of all, it's a verb, so it's active, not passive. It's something that's in process, evolving, not static. And that's as true with people as it is with God. Let me read what the Random House Dictionary defines as to know or knowing, because as we consider coming to know God, these definitions are very revealing all by themselves. The various definitions are to perceive, to have fixed in the mind, to be acquainted with, to understand from experience or attainment, to be able to distinguish as one from another. Whenever I think I don't really know God, I'm always caught up short by looking at the world around us and knowing instantly whether some action, event, or conduct is of God or not. As the dictionary statement said, I find I can distinguish one from another, man's ways versus God's ways, true, right, or wrong. But that's not really enough, since our perceptions and conscience can often be wrong, ignorant, or misled. We can be laboring under the misunderstanding and the grief that comes from it, a feeling that we're not good enough to know God. And while that may be technically true, it has nothing whatsoever to do with God's love for us. See, I don't know about you, but when I conceive of knowing someone, I think of seeing them, touching them, hearing their voice, looking in their eyes, watching their conduct, knowing their favorite color, and so forth. Knowing them. How can we do that with God? Is that what He means by knowing? Evidently not. It goes deeper. I grew up in my grandfather's house, my mother's father, and by the time I came along, he was retired from a lifetime as an officer in the Marine Corps. And yes, he was as solid as they come. Infinitely true to his word, but he was also deeply loving and gentle and caring. As with the rest of my family, I knew by instinct as a child that I was loved and safe because of what was shown, not preached. So I could say about him, if he was still around, still here now, that if he said to me, Bob, there's a cliff over there, go jump off that cliff, I could do it without question. Why? Because he was a Marine? My grandfather? Head of the house? Or else? None of that. I could do it because I knew I was loved. I was wanted. Therefore, I'd also know that on the other side of that cliff, there'd be a lake, a river, or a giant mattress to catch me. In other words, I'd know I was in no danger. Now, if we could just get there with God. Thomas, who knew Jesus personally, had to touch his resurrected body to get there. How do we touch him? How do we know him? The scriptural answers are there. But first, let me quote a wise saying by one of my favorite authors, who wrote, "Faith and reason are the two shoes we wear. And you can go further with both than with either one alone." To know God or anyone, you have to be able to reason out in a godly way the solid evidence that makes that person knowable, worth knowing. Something on which to base faith, as I mentioned with my grandfather. But sometimes reason will fail, as it did with Job. And then all you're left with is faith. One always points to the other. So, God has to give us many proofs of who and what He is and why He wants us, at least to the degree that He allows us to understand or that He makes us capable of understanding. The Revell Bible Dictionary points out some of His methods, all of which are a form of self-revelation. Number one, His acts in history as recorded in the Bible. Number two, the qualities ascribed to Him in that same book. Number three, the testimony of the creation itself, of the universe, of immutable law, which requires intelligence. And four, the names by which He's known. All of these things reveal His true character. And isn't that what we mean by knowing someone? I'm always intrigued by certain people who've come along through the years and struggle with or puzzle over God's true nature when the Bible declares it outright. Love. That's His true nature. But godly love is seen in devotion, in dedication, in keeping one's word and so forth, just as much as it's a warm, kind, welcoming thing. Whereas it's easy to say, I love you, true love is exhibited in the simple phrase, let me help, which is what God's saying to us all the time, which is really part of the intent of His personal name in the Bible, Yahweh, or however you pronounce that, which means the one who is always present, always there, always ready to help, if we'll accept it. Psalm 91 is a good study of all God wants to do for us. It's filled with testimony of how trustworthy He is and how ready to help. And I've been putting off till near the end of this the more obvious statements about knowing God in 1 John 2, verses 3 to 6. The first part of which says, and by this we know that we've come to know Him, if we keep His commandments. John isn't reducing this to legalism or to a level of perfect human conduct, which we can never reach. And the Bible confirms that as well. Just review Paul's words about himself many years into his walk with God in Romans, the 7th chapter, if you want confirmation. So to clarify, let's look at 1 John 2 in the Amplified Bible. Same verse. And this is how we may discern daily by experience that we are coming to know Him, to perceive, recognize, understand, and become better acquainted with Him. If we keep, which means to bear in mind, to observe, to practice His teachings, His precepts, His commandments. That's how He says we can know that we know Him and love Him. If we're always seeking to know His way. Because true love delights to do His will. And verse 6 adds simply, the one who says he abides in Him ought himself to walk in the same manner as He walked, to live as He lived. Very simple. It's a truism that the more you know God, the greater He seems, until you realize He's too great to ever fully understand at all. He is beyond finding out. So this great God, this unfathomable being, like any good father, reached down to His children and, knowing the gap between us, simply said, think of me as your father and your friend. And build your knowledge and your faith on that. Or, as Jesus said, to attain the kingdom, become as a little child with God. Build on that if you want to know him. Until the day arrives, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12, now I only know in part, but then I shall know, even as I'm already known. Can you know God? The answer is simple on several levels. The answer is yes, if only because God says from Genesis to Revelation that he wants us to know him. The answer is yes, because he continues throughout your life to reveal himself to you, to reveal his spirit, his attitude, his character, which is how we know anyone. And the more you know those things, the more you want to be like that. And the answer is yes, because it's easy to come to know someone you know loves you. It's easy to come to that throne of grace when you know you're always wanted and always safe. If you want to know God, you can ask yourself at any time in your life and at the end of your life, are you devoted to good or evil? It's that simple.